Hello and welcome to the D3Football.com Around the Nation podcast for the week of October 29th, 2007. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And we're coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota after a weekend of Division III football. Five games on Friday, one on Saturday. But we start off one state to the east where second-ranked Mary Hardin-Baylor was out of it early at third-ranked Whitewater. Never got it together, lost 41-14. Yeah, Keith, I know you spent some time on the blog on this topic already, and while I think everybody knows you can't go minus five on turnovers and win, I think it's also pretty obvious that Whitewater is a better team now than it was in September. Why is that?
Well, they had a lot of turnover from last year, Pat. Not just, you know, on offense. We know all the talent they lost there, but along the defensive line and in the coaching staff. You know, they bring in a new offensive coordinator, they bring in a new head coach, and we knew it was going to take a little time for them to gel and to put together the kind of team, you know, the identity for this year's team that they had this season. And it wasn't quite there, I think, in that game earlier in the season when they played Division II St. Cloud State. And it might not have been all the way there when they played lacrosse. They had to put together that fourth quarter comeback. And maybe that was the day they started building their identity a little bit. And, you know, Saturday's game against Mary Hardin-Baylor, it just got off on the right foot from the beginning, generated those turnovers early, got that 21-0 lead. And then I think the real important thing was they never let Mary Hardin-Baylor get back into the game.
Is it an offensive identity, or is this really still just a defensive game? I'm looking at the numbers, and I know, obviously, the game wasn't played on paper, but Mary Hardin-Baylor did outgain Whitewater. We mentioned the five turnovers. Two of them returned, you know, all the way for 6 points, a 60-yard interception return in the first quarter, and then another 60-yard interception return in the fourth quarter. You combine that with the two fumbles, the extra interception, and, you know, are we sure Whitewater's offense is all back together, or frankly, I look at the other number that jumps out at me is Justin Beaver, 29 carries for 77 yards.
Well, I think part of it is they didn't need him on Saturday, because when you have, you know, you generate 14 points on defense and they set up a third touchdown by running an interception back to the 9-yard line, and you know, when you don't necessarily need to go to your bread and butter all day, then Justin Beaver maybe is not going to put up those kind of numbers that that we're accustomed to seeing from him. I think another big factor, though, is the Whitewater defense is really, really obviously playing well. But Mary Hardin-Baylor must have seen something on tape to make them want to throw the ball that much, because that's a team that's built on running the ball. And for them to feel like they had to pass it, and obviously it didn't work out well for them, you know, speaks a lot about what they probably saw on tape when they looked at that Whitewater defense.
The pair of rushers that ran for more than 500 yards last Saturday, Jarvis Thrasher and Quincy Daniels, end up with 36 carries for 118 yards. Now, this will probably, end up engendering a lot of questions. Is St. John's really the third best team in the country? And, of course, we just saw them play this weekend.
They gave up 34 points to St. Thomas, and even though they were able to outscore them offensively and kind of come back every time St. Thomas made it an interesting game, we saw that they had probably some holes in the secondary, and that's something that they got to get fixed before the playoffs, because it's certainly there's going to be teams that are going to be able to throw the ball against them and take advantage of that.
And we know that John Gilardi knows that the cornerbacks were tested, and I wouldn't say passed a whole lot of those tests on Saturday. P.J. Tyson certainly had his way in the against them in the secondary, and they gave up a lot of plays and a lot of routes.
Absolutely, and that's a team that's going to move up, or you know, by the time you hear this, may have already moved up to number three in the polls. But is that the third best team in the country? It's really hard to say, especially when you look at what kind of team Mary Hardin-Baylor played on Saturday, going up to Whitewater, who's a team that's probably going to move up to number two.
Yeah, unfortunately, the top of my ballot, it's like, I don't know who the third best team is. I used to be able to plot out pretty easily who my best four teams were. Now it's like I have two teams and the rest is a real jumble.
That's really the kind of season it's been, and what that does get us thinking a little bit about is what kind of fun we're going to have in the playoffs. Because, you know, a lot of us, we're looking at who we think is going to be in the Stag Bowl, but there's a lot of questions of who's going to win the regional titles and that sort of thing. So it'll be a lot of fun, I think, to watch.
All right, so if you haven't been at your anywhere near your TV or near ESPN in the last couple of days, you may not know Trinity of Texas put together 15 laterals for 60 yards, and an ending I really think puts the miracle in the mud and the Stanford band to shame. But, of course, that game had title implications as well in the Southern Collegiate Athletic Conference.
Yeah, we talk about fun to watch. That was just exciting play. How can you not love it? If you haven't seen it, you got to get on your computer and go find it. It was the lead on ESPN SportsCenter Saturday night, and they talked about, you know, celebrate the celebration of Trinity winning that game, but it was a lot more than the game. I think that they won because they probably clinched them the SCAC title and most likely the playoff bid that comes along with that. Meanwhile, Millsaps now, two of the most difficult losses we've seen across the nation this season, blowing a big lead in week one against Mississippi College in the fourth quarter and then losing on that a 15 lateral. Just amazing, amazing play by Trinity. Certainly something that we'll remember for a long time, and Millsaps will remember for all the wrong reasons.
Is this the year that Trinity or the SCAC wins a playoff game for the first time since 2002?
Well, the South all of a sudden after Saturday looks, you know, almost wide open. You got Wesley, who won at Salisbury. You have, you know, those are two teams that, that both could be in the South region, depending on how things shake out. You also have Mary Hardin Baylor, who lost at Whitewater. Washington Jefferson squeaked by Waynesburg. And then Muhlenberg also squeaked by Dickinson. So these are just some of the top teams in the South. It looks like it could be a lot of fun to watch in the playoffs. And the kind of momentum that Trinity can build from a play like that, you know, you can't really put an estimate on it.
Yeah, respect obviously is not one of the playoff criteria. And regardless of that, Waynesburg going toe-to-toe with Washington and Jefferson has to help that in just a little bit. One of the things that's going to hurt them, of course, is their opponent's winning percentage coming into the week was just 369. Obviously, W&J will help bump that up a little bit, but then it's going to bump right back down and they'll be in a kind of a bit of a mess of one-loss teams trying to get into the playoffs.
Well, yeah, the first thing they have to do, they finish at Geneva and against Westminster. And, you know, Geneva's been a pretty tough team in their first year transitioning over from NAIA at 5-2 right now. So Waynesburg's got to finish out, win those two games to get in this Pool C discussion. But, Pat, they did earn our respect on Saturday. When you play a team like Washington Jefferson, you know, perennial top 25 team, and a team that's usually in control of the President's Athletic Conference, you know, they had them on the ropes, not, you know, not knocked out, but they, but certainly led in the fourth quarter and had a chance to win that game. And I think when you look at the strength of their opponents and how some of their seasons have gone, when you talk about Wooster, Grove City, you know, St. Vincent being a first-year program, Waynesburg, even though they were 7-0, they hadn't really earned our respect, really until the last couple weeks, I guess, by beating Teal and beating Washington Jefferson.
Looking at Pool B, of course, the President's Athletic Conference no longer in competition for Pool B bids. These are schools that are independents or from the UAA or the Northwest Conference or the Atlantic Central. And it seems more and more after Saturday like there will be two teams from the Atlantic Central in the playoffs, both Wesley and Salisbury now with one loss after the 20-13 win on Saturday by Wesley. It seems like one-loss teams in Pool B are looking pretty strong. But, of course, there was another team that picked up loss number two on Saturday, and WashU is not looking in good shape.
No, and, you know, we did get a little bit ahead of ourselves when we started talking about WashU's playoff chances because they had to finish out. You know, they have this Case Western reserve game next week that everybody was looking forward to maybe see if that would was going to decide the UAA title, but we knew both teams might come out of that game with one loss and be in good shape for a Pool B bid. WashU didn't get there because they lost to Carnegie Mellon today. Carnegie Mellon, the champion last year. Wesley, on the other hand, comes out of the game with still one loss intact, and they finish at Morrisville State on November 10th. So you got to figure they're going to finish 9-1. Salisbury, I think, you know, in good shape as well for a Pool B bid. So now in Pool B, and may, you know, the three guaranteed bids, we got to look out west and look at that clash next week when Linfield and Whitworth meet.
Wesley, Salisbury, Case Western Reserve in very strong contention right now. Linfield, you know, obviously they have the two losses, only one of them in region. Of course, one of them was outside of Division III. As you mentioned, they go to Whitworth, presumably an elimination game. Both those teams have two losses overall.
Yeah, and it's not so much the overall losses, but it's going to be the, you know, the quality of the schedule they played, how that shakes out when the committee looks at the criteria. Certainly the team that loses the Linfield-Whitworth game is out of the discussion. Whitworth struggled on Saturday, winning against Willamette 2017 in overtime.
In the East region, a couple of the top teams struggled. Of course, Alfred lost outright at Hobart and not by a particularly close score. RPI did end up winning against Worcester Tech against WPI in double overtime, but you know, RPI didn't look very good either.
No, and I mean, a playoff team is going to have a couple games like that during the season where they got to pull it out at the end. And so, you know, RPI can look at that as a positive. But really, when you struggle with a team that's not in the top half of your league, in terms of the Liberty League, you know, that's not a good sign going forward. But what is a good sign is the four teams in the top half of the Liberty League, along with RPI, Union, Hobart, Rochester, they all play two of the other two among the top of the league. So that league's going to sort itself out in a couple fun weeks, I think, up there in New York.
RPI to this point has just one game against a team with a winning record, and that is beating Hobart back in week four when, you know, Hobart maybe doesn't have it all put together. Hobart changing quarterbacks this year. They played Endicott and Utica out of conference. That's not particularly inspiring. They've played Susquehanna and Merchant Marine in the league, and those teams are combined 1-15. They played St. Lawrence, who's 2-5, and they nearly lost at WPI, who's 4-4.
Yeah, but that Hobart win could loom large. If RPI is able to win out, and they'll finish in the Dutchman Shoes rivalry game at Union, and that could be, you know, for the Liberty League title and the automatic bid. A lot of things could happen here in the Liberty League in the last 2 weeks, and that's got to be a lot of fun, I think, for those fans to watch.
On the Alfred side, you never like to take a loss, but then again, a late season non-conference loss to a good team might be the reality check, a kind of that some team can build off of.
Well, we talked about this a couple weeks ago with Wartburg losing an out-of-conference game to Augsburg. It affects them, but it doesn't affect them in conference. They're still right where they want to be. All their goals are still in front of them for Alfred in terms of winning the Empire 8. And for Wartburg, same thing. They're still in the mix in the Iowa Conference.
And for Alfred, all they have to do is go win at Ithaca and St. John Fisher the next 2 weeks. So we mentioned earlier Danny Jones' team, Wisconsin Whitewater, pulling off the big upset. Of course, Danny Jones' old team pulled off a real big upset late in the night on Saturday night as Cal Lutheran went to Occidental and won 43-25.
Well, you know, we talked about flirting with disaster, and if you do it the way RPI did it and they pull out the win at the end, it can be a positive for your team. But if you do it the way Occidental did it, they've been flirting with it pretty much all season. They pulled out, they had to block a point after earlier in the season to pull out the victory against Claremont Mudscripts. They trailed last week at the half against Pomona Pitzer. And, you know, even though a team that dominates its league, I think when you flirt with disaster over and over again, one of these days, you know, you're not going to have it, and the other team is going to have it. And that looks like what happened to them on Saturday against Cal Lutheran.
Cal Lutheran now remains unbeaten in the SCIAC, 4-3 overall, but 4-0 in the league. Occidental, 4-1. Redlands sitting with one loss in the league as well, so there's a very real chance of a three-way tie in the SCIAC.
And that's one of the main leagues we're going to be watching, not just for a three-way tie, but also for the possibility of of two teams going to the playoffs, one in Pool A with the automatic qualifier and one in Pool C. Redlands, of course, goes to Cal Lutheran on November 10th. That's week 11.
A couple of other games that mattered on Saturday. College of New Jersey dominant over Cortland State, 30-0. TCNJ in control in the NJAC. A couple other games head-to-head. USA South was North Carolina Wesleyan beating Christopher Newport, 42-32 in the Centennial. It was Muhlenberg beating Dickinson 29-23. And, of course, we still got two unbeaten teams left at the top of the MAC standings as Albright beat Lebanon Valley, and it was Widener back on Friday night beating Delaware Valley 13-10. So there's a head-to-head game coming up this week between Widener and Albright, two undefeated teams in the MAC.
Yeah, Pat, and it's amazing that all those games got buried this deep in the podcast, but that's what kind of week it was this week. Just tremendous things happening all across the country. You know, you have number two going up to play number three. You have that amazing return or lateral play at the end of the Trinity game, and so many things. And that was a huge game, TCNJ playing Cortland State, you know, big NJAC title implications, playoff implications, and it was just such a crazy day across the country that some of those things got lost. You know, another one that we haven't had a chance to talk about was Randolph-Macon beating Guilford, Washington Lee beating Bridgewater, which sets up a situation where that big rivalry game at the end of the season in the Old Dominion Athletic Conference is now going to decide the title.
And that's between Randolph-Macon and Hampton-Sydney. And Bridgewater eliminated from ODAC contention with 2 weeks to play.
Yeah, which is something that we're certainly not accustomed to seeing. That's a team that had been dominant in the league from about 2000, midway through 2000 to 2005 last year. You know, took a step back, and a lot of us thought that was probably a fluke, and they were going to jump right back on their normal winning ways this year, and it hasn't been the case. We've seen leagues, conferences like the Old Dominion, also, Iowa's another one, New Jersey's another one, where they've been much more balanced conferences this year, which is great for the fans, you know, when they're watching. But it also means they maybe aren't going to put out that dominant team through the playoffs. You know, in Iowa, Central's got the record, but they certainly have, as we've talked about and written about, they've struggled to win some of those games. They've had to pull them out in the end. So it's certainly maybe not a dominant team, especially in that West region.
And congratulations to Linfield, which clinched its 52nd consecutive winning season. They beat Menlo on Saturday 37-6, so they have their fifth win of the season, and they cannot finish under 500. Games that are coming up this weekend for Week 10, that we go back to Pool B land as Wash U is at Case Western Reserve. Albright is at Widener, the aforementioned unbeaten teams in the MAC. Rowan playing at Cortland State, a game which held a lot more interest about a month and a half ago. Centennial, unbeaten Muhlenberg against one loss or Sinus. Illinois Wesleyan at North Central, a game that is still important in the CCIW.
I think that'll be a great one to watch, especially with Illinois Wesleyan going to North Park on Saturday, winning just 20-14 against a team that's 1-7, 0-5 in the CCIW. Now they go to North Central next week, and North Central's a team that's kind of flown under the radar since they had Wheaton on the ropes, lost in a comeback earlier in the season, and we haven't talked much about them, even though we saw them play at Elmhurst, and they looked pretty good in the fourth quarter in that game. And they're 6-2 right now, 4-1 in the conference. So still a possibility for a three-way tie there if North Central wins next week and then Illinois Wesleyan wins against Wheaton in week 11.
The Midwest Conference wraps up its season a week early. Of course, St. Norbert clinched the automatic bid last week. Mount Union joined them in the playoffs this week. And wrapping up the Midwest Conference in the Bronze Turkey game, Monmouth is at Knox. And, of course, one other game with Pool B implications, as we mentioned before, Linfield is at Whitworth. And don't forget to check back at d3football.com throughout the week, including Keith's Around the Nation column on Thursday.